So happy you're listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jerry Apps, who has written a pile of books, and they're great books. And he's got a new one out. It's called Campfires and Loon Calls, Travels in the Boundary Waters. And I had a chance to read it. I just finished it this past week and really enjoyed it, learning about the Boundary Waters and about his some of the great experiences and some pretty funny ones, too, that he's had over time. So it's great to have him with us, and certainly look forward to your questions and comments as we move along. Have you canoed the Boundary Waters? Do you have a special place you like to go to? Changes you might have noticed over the years? Do you have questions about how to get it done, how to get up there, and what to do when you're at the Boundary Waters? Certainly, Jerry's got questions. If you've never camped, do you want to? What's stopping you? All those things we could talk about with him. So join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Jerry Apps, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's always good to be here.
I tell you what, I really did enjoy your travels and sometimes travails in the Boundary Waters. You've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, 25 years. We started in 1983. My photographer's son thought that I needed to have a wilderness experience because he'd been up there for several years. And so I joined him, and we've been doing it ever since, sometimes with more members of the family. But always with Steve, and mm-hmm. So we've had with the exception of 1 year, we've had just a grand time exploring all the nooks and crannies, and as you said earlier, we've had our share of misfortunes, sometimes our own fault. One of the things I'm most noted for, and this goes way back to my Army days, is getting lost. I can't read a map for anything. You can only ask my wife to underline that. And so if that's part of the experience in the Boundary Waters, is the question of where do you think we are now?
You know, the Boundary Waters, one of the things I really liked about the book in part was that you did a little history of the Boundary Waters, which I found very interesting. I'd never read anything about it, and it's worth it to talk about that a little
sure.
bit.
Sure. Well, those folks who know my writing know that I work as a historian, and I mostly write about rural topics, both fiction and nonfiction. So when I, working with Fulcrum Press out of Golden, Colorado, when they asked me to work on this project, I said, well, I don't want to just do a how-to on canoeing in the Boundary Waters. I could do that, but there are a lot of books like that. I wanted to go a little deeper, and I wanted to dig out some of the history. And the history of that area is absolutely fascinating, yeah, as you might guess, because that's where the voyageurs paddled their canoes in search of furs that they were trading with the Indians. It goes back to... in terms of it being an area set aside as a the beginnings of a wilderness area, it goes back to 1902, yeah, when all of that was government land after some Indian treaties were signed. And in 1902, half a million acres, interestingly enough, that's a lot of land.
Yeah.
Half a million acres were set aside for non-development. They just said, we're not going to develop this. And that has now grown to over 1 million acres, and it's 100 miles, longer than 100 miles along the Canadian border, and it's some 30 miles wide at places. It's one of the few places left in North America, well, certainly in the United States, the lower states, that there's quiet and yeah, there's no light pollution. So I dug out all of that history, and it's a checkered history, as you might guess,
yeah, it sure
because
is.
The developers and the preservationists and the local people and the federal people,
lots of battles.
Oh, they went round and round and round, and it was finally declared a wilderness area in 1978. There's still unhappiness on the part of a lot of folks who believe that every one of those lakes ought to have a condo on it, and that motorboats ought to be allowed on all of them. One of the compromises, and I've got this here somewhere, there are about 1,000 lakes and streams in the boundary waters, and I think only 14 of them allow motors. Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
I think so. I'm a firm believer that there should be some area set aside where we can see what nature is really like. Mm-hmm. Those who believe that it's totally untouched, I'm talking about the boundary waters area, that's not so. It had been logged off, and there are all kinds of strange things happening. There are mining exploits going on. Because as if you know that part of Minnesota, in the south, not very far, is the big iron mines. So there are books written on the topic. I think I read 3 books on the history, and the more I got into it, the more I thought, how in the world am I going to boil that down to a chapter, which is what I tried to do.
Well, and you did a fine job of it. Nick in Green Bay has a comment or question. Nick, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I was up there in 87 with Outward Bound. I spent 30 days up there. I got so many stories, and it's just such an awesome place. The only thing that kind of disappointed me was I was up there right after the root beer lady died, so that kind of wasn't so much fun, but it's the best place to go. I mean, Outward Bound was the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, it's a very special place, and for those who've not been there, it's very hard to describe. I can tell you what physically it's like, and I can talk to you about the black flies, the mosquitoes, and all that sort of stuff that are there in the early part of the summer. But the part that's very hard to describe is the feelings associated with, for instance, watching a thunderstorm boil up out of the west, especially just as the sun is going down and the clouds come over and it becomes dark, and it is the 4th of July 10 times over, and it's natural. And it's very hard and I tried in the book to write about it, but it's hard to describe that without experiencing it. It creates a special feeling, a special connection that people have with nature that it's hard to replicate.
Yeah, it absolutely. Thanks, Nick. Thank you very much for calling. David in Brookfield, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going? I'm really enjoying the program. I wanted to comment or have a question about where would you recommend going in the Boundary Waters? I've only been to Quantico Provincial Park with the Voyager Outfitter program back in high school. And speaking of the thunderstorms, 96, I recall watching the fireworks over the Boundary Waters as I laid in my tent looking out over the lake. I quite like it.
Well, we go in at Grand Marais. Lots of folks go in at Ely. You can go in at Isabella. You can go in on the Arrowhead way up on the Canadian border. It's a matter of choice. One of the reasons we go in at Grand Marais and then up toward the Canadian border, and this sounds selfish, I suspect, but we try to find an area where we're not going to see very many people. And there are some parts of the Boundary Waters, especially in midsummer, where you see a lot of people. Still, it's controlled, but still you see a lot of folks. But Steve and I suppose we're ornery in that way. We appreciate, for instance, we like to brag about having gone 2 days, and it has happened a couple of times, without seeing another canoe. I mean, that's really kind of awesome to not see another person for a couple of days. So that's one of the reasons we go in that area that's way up in the northeast, tucked up against the Canadian border. We're always only a half a mile or so from Canada. This is an aside, but what's kind of fun is that when you canoe the border lakes, you never know if you're in Canada or if you're in the United States. And it's kind of fun because our Homeland Security is all agitated about that sort of stuff, and they want to make sure you've got a passport when you cross over into Canada. In fact, one quick story, there was a big sign at the entrance to one of those lakes from Homeland Security, and it said that If you are a canoeist from Canada, you are required to register at the immigration office as soon as you arrive. Now, the immigration office is 30 miles from this lake. So this poor bugger from Canada is supposed to heist his canoe and walk 30 miles to register?
Oh, boy. I remember Renee and I... We specifically canoed across a spot to get into Canada, and then turned around and canoed back out.
Well, you look at the map, and it's sort of fuzzy. Well, is this really or is this not? It's kind of fun.
Oh, boy. Thanks for calling, David.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. And Jamie in Green Bay, hello.
Hello. I have a how-to question. I'm sorry. I'm
That's
enjoying
right.
the history. What is the best way to clean up after a meal in the Boundary Waters?
Well, there's some restrictions that you will abide by, have to abide by. One is that no dishwashing in the lake mm-hmm. or even near the lake. You need to be so many yards away. If that's part of what you're asking. And we do what I call minimalist cooking, meaning that we have very, very few dishes. And so our cleanup is, it doesn't amount to a whole lot. Now there's a rule, that is unspoken for a long time, but now written down. When you leave, a camp spot, camping site in the Boundary Waters, and you can only camp at the designated ones, it should look more pristine when you arrived. In other words, you pick up everything. There's nothing left behind. Is that helping to answer your question?
Well, for instance, like when you do wash dishes, where does that water, that wastewater go? Do you dump it like in the fire pit?
No, we dump it way up in the woods. Goodly distance away. And we use very little water. Once you've done this for a while, water, this sounds really a contradiction. Water is a precious commodity. Here there are 1,000 lakes and yet we're boiling all of our water to make sure it's safe. Thus we are not using very much water. So even with dishwashing, there's very little water.
Mm, there you go.
Great. And would you like pictures from Boundary Water Strips on your Facebook page?
I would love that. Put that. Oh, yes, please do.
If you do go to Boundary Waters with a friend, make sure that your temperature tolerances are similar. I went with a Norwegian friend in October and just about froze.
Well, we go there in September, and we've been there below freezing a number of times. So you're right. You got to watch that.
We'll talk some more with Jerry Apps in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jerry Apps, Wisconsin Public Radio favorite. He's an author, a storyteller, a historian, avid paddler, and he spent a lot of time in the Boundary Waters canoe area, primarily with his son, Steve. Has a new book out published by Fulcrum. It's Campfires and Loon Calls, Travels in the Boundary Waters, with some wonderful stories about his experiences there, but also a lot of really good information I think you can use if you ever plan to go there. If you've already been there once or many more times, I think you'll enjoy reading the book for the stories. You probably have a fair number of stories of your own to share and to think about. So great to have him along. Join in at 1-800-642-1234, email talk@wpr.org. And Jerry, of course, a little earlier, I was talking with Darren Bush of Rutabaga, and he mentioned that you were going to be a speaker at Canoecopia this week.
I am. I'm doing two sessions, and I'll mention them. On Friday, March 11th, at 5:30, and Saturday, the next day, March 12th, at 3:30. So Friday at 5:30 and Saturday at 3:30. And then next Tuesday, the 15th of March at 7 o'clock, I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble West here in Madison talking about the book. And then to just mention one other date, and this goes ahead a couple of months, but on May 26th at 7, I'm doing a presentation at the Eagle River Library. And I've got a bunch more if you just go to my website, which is www.jerryapps.com. Click on my blog, and there's my schedule. So it's just jerryapps.com JerryApps.com. Click on my blog, and there you will see my schedule. People say, what's an old guy like you messing around with a blog? Well, that's how it goes.
It's kind of fun, though, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, boy. Jason in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Larry, long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm really looking forward to getting this book. It's really interesting topic, but I'd like to order a large pizza to go.
I have no idea what that was about, but there you have it. Let's go to Leslie in Preston, Minnesota. Hello, Leslie.
Hi, Larry. Man, Darren Bush and Jerry talking about the Boundary Waters on a crappy winter day. It doesn't get any better than that. Oh, I can't tell you how fun this is. I just wanted to say I can't wait to get home and get the book. I'm going to order it as soon as I get home. But we go up to the Boundary Waters. We have for years with the kids. And I just want to say nowadays you hear so much about kids not getting out in nature. I can't stress how conducive camping is to kids of any age. We took our kids when they were really little, and they just were like little billy goats on the rocks. After a while, they knew just where to step, and we had so much fun with never getting our billfolds out for like a whole week. You'd be in there, never had to think about buying anything. You're just there and experiencing and have wonderful stories to tell about it. But two quick ones I wanted to just say. One time we were up there, and the guys, my husband and son, went out fishing at night for walleye. And we were up through the Gunflint Trail and up on Sag and way up north by the, you can almost see that flagpole to the Canadian, whatever you call it. Anyway, they went out, and we were camped, and the guys were out fishing for walleye, and I thought I was so brave being back at camp alone with the girls, so being brave, we got them tucked in, turned out the lights and waited for the guys. Well, you can't turn out the light.
It really gets dark up there.
So luckily we got our guys back. But then the other thing was that we were exploring this little creek that comes around the trails and campground. Pretty brisk little creek there. It's just a beautiful spot and huge rocks you can dive off of. And we were just spending a half a day outing just playing in that creek and going down it like a water slide, a natural water slide, just paddling up and floating down on our stomachs and trying to not get scuffed up. And here comes a boat with some other people in it, young kids and a family with young kids. And these kids were fishing, and one of the kids jumped up into the boat and sat right on a hook. And if you think a wolf howls out in the woods, you let out the biggest yell, but they did get it out and everything was fine. So.
Well, that's a great testimonial. Two things I would comment on. One is that once you are there, there is absolutely nothing to buy.
Yeah.
In fact, where we are, it's a good 30 miles to any place to buy anything. So that's kind of interesting. But the fact that it's a wonderful place for kids. For those who are a little bit skittish about that and reluctant to take young children camping, this is not at the Boundary Waters, but we were camping with our kids when they were still in diapers. If you say, how could you do that? Kids adjust so quickly to the out-of-doors if just given a chance. And the Boundary Waters is a wonderful place to introduce kids to a world that's very different from the one that they're most accustomed to.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate your call very much. Helen in West Salem. On to you. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I've read many of your books, and I'm going to look forward to your next book, too. But there's one I want to mention. Maybe you've already heard of it, called Roughing It Elegantly by Patricia Bell. It's a book that I bought. It was recommended before we went boundary canoe camping because I really didn't know anything about it. And this book tells you everything you'd ever want to know about food, recipes, cooking, sleeping, taking kids, the whole bit. So I highly recommend it. It just made everything so wonderful for us, and it just was so encouraging to read and find out exactly what you had to do and what to expect. And so that's all.
That sounds like a good book. And there are a number of excellent how-to books for people who want to know exactly what to do. From my book, you'll get some general ideas, and you'll learn how we've done it. But the way we do it may not be the way you want to do it. Mm-hmm. And these other guidebooks will help you.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Helen. And George in Madison, hello to you.
Oh, hi, Gary and Larry. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a little story. If you want to listen to the story, I've canoed in the Boundary Waters since I was age 14. I'm 61 now, and I've been up there many, many, many times. And I want to tell you a story. This today reminds me of a spring when I was 19, 20 years old. There's some friends decided let's go on a canoe trip. So we go up to the Boundary Waters, three guys and three girls, and we get up there, Moose Lake, out of Ely, and we're taking off from Moose Lake, and it's starting to snow a little bit, and people are saying, what are you doing? Well, we'll get there. I'm going to go down by Dorothy's Island. You remember Dorothy, who owned property in the Boundary Waters.
Sure.
You know who I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so it's snowing, and we take off, and we're staying close to the shore, and we're paddling along, and it's getting a little worse. We finally get there. We get through the Knife Lake chain. There's like five rapids and portages. We get through that, and we get through and go through Dorothy's Islands or Dorothy's area, and there's nobody there. And so I camp about, just down from there. Like, there's a camping spot I enjoy, and I've been there before. So we can set up camp, and we get the snow is still coming down a little bit, but not bad. So in the middle of the night, the girls were in one tent and the guys in the other. We were just friends. And in the middle of the night, the tents collapsed and there's a blizzard. We peek out and the snow is going horizontal to the ground and there's a foot of snow. It is thick. And the snow is on us, the tents on us. We're trying to prop stuff up and then, oh my gosh. So we get ourselves together. We get all our gear together. It's all wet. I think, well, we'll go back to Dorothy's Islands because there are cabins there. She had cabins, if you recall. So we go, and she used to sell stuff in the summers, and I'd been there before when we came up with a Y group. So we go back there, and we're looking around, and there's nobody there. So we're getting ready to, we got to break into one of these cabins. We have to get shelter. This is a blizzard. And we're talking about that, and we're thinking about doing that. Then out of the middle, from nowhere, this voice says, "Go help you guys." And we turn around, and there's a guy standing with a T-shirt, no hat, crew cut, pants on, tennis shoes, and a .45 stuck in his belt with his hand on it. Like, oh, my God. You know, he's scared. Where'd you come from? What are you doing? We just want to get out of the storm and, come on in. And so we go in, and there's Dorothy sitting there in her cabin and this guy. And they're being kind of cool towards us. You know, they're not very happy that we're going to try to break into one of their cabins. So I said, "Well, I used to come up here as a kid, and I signed your book. Remember, you did." And she gets out this book, and this book was full of names. And I said, "Well, back in 1965 and 64, she found my name." And then she lightened up and she brightened up, and the guy kind of relaxed. And I kind of, oh, geez, I kind of relaxed. They're not going to shoot us or anything or send us out in the blizzard, you know. So, okay, well, I guess you can stay in one of the cabins and, just take the wood, that's easy to get. And so we stayed there for a couple of days while the blizzard went through. And the story goes on.
Maybe you stayed there till spring.
Well, that's just one of the many kinds of funny stories.
Oh, it's a place for stories. I've got bear stories, moose stories, fish stories, loon stories, eagle stories. It's just a place for stories.
You had a great people story, and I thought of it when you were talking earlier about not seeing many people. you and Steve, I believe, were canoeing and came upon four women.
This is my younger son, Jeff.
Oh, it was the younger son.
Yeah, that's a year that Steve couldn't make it. And, yeah, just quickly, unfortunately, that year, being a sort of cocky canoeist, as we sometimes were and are, we didn't bother to have a map. We stopped at the ranger station in Isabella, and they drew on the back of an envelope a map. Wow, oh, my gosh. So that was our map. And we were looking for a portage to another lake. And so we're paddling along, and I've got the envelope on my lap, and Jeff is looking at me. And we're going along, and, of course, what looks right when the map, when you don't have a map. And we did. We come upon this area where there were four young women, and when they saw us, they jumped to their feet and they held a blanket up in front of them. Well, you can guess what they were doing. They were nude
sunbathing.
So we paddled on by real nonchalant. I said, Jeff, act like we hardly see them. You know, we paddled on by. Well, unfortunately, we came to a dead end. We had to turn around, come back. This time when we went by them, they weren't at all happy. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. George, thanks for that story as well, for your story as well. Marilyn in Montfort, on to you. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello. I have a loon story from the Boundary Waters.
Okay.
I used to lead canoe trips for the Methodist Church in that area. I took a group of women to Northern Light Lake, and we were out on a peninsula that has a campsite on it, and it was just at dusk, and I've never seen anything like this before or since or heard of anyone that had, and I'd love to know what we saw, but 13 loons flew in to beside the shore all at once, and they pretty much were in a circle facing each other, and they would call to each other, and they would get up on their, some would flap their wings and get up, stretch out from the water, and then they'd go down, and others would get up, and it appeared to be like a ballet or a dance, and they did this for about 20 minutes, and then when they were done, they flew away. And loons are always solitary, and you might see a pair, but I've never seen anything like this, and I didn't know if Jerry...
Well, this was obviously the annual loon convention. when they come together and show off, I don't know what it was. I've never seen that. That sounds wonderful.
What time of the year was it?
It was August.
August, okay. The times when loons are together in a flock are typically toward
migration time,
and then often it's the unpaired males will often be together, and so maybe they were getting ready to go to head out.
My favorite loon story that I talk about in my book. One time we were watching a loon with a little one. And lo and behold, it was attacked by a bald eagle. And we were watching this with a binocular. Now, a loon is a big bird, bigger than most people think. And it successfully beat that eagle with its wings like you could not imagine. And this was the loon was attacked maybe three or four times with the loon beating it unmercifully, and finally the eagle went off and sat in a tall tree. It was embarrassed, that eagle. That does not supposed to happen. Anyway, I talk about that at some length in the book.
Thanks, Marilyn, for calling. Appreciate it. Boy. Jim in Winchester, on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Yes, in 1918, my father and his brother canoed up in that Boundary Waters, and they were gone for a whole month. There were no maps really made out then. No signs for sure. You had to do the best you could. And they saw one human being in 1 month, and the human being was an older Indian, and he was in his own birch bark canoe that he had made. That was the only person they saw.
That's a great story.
For a whole month.
Yep.
1918. Well, you'd be hard pressed to go a month with and not seeing anybody up there now. I suppose you might be able to do it, but
that'd be tricky.
It'd be really tricky. But that's a cool story. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Dick in Waukesha, it's on to you. Hi, Dick.
I have a quick bear story. I was going to tell another one, but I was I started my Forest Service career in Ely, but this I moved around a lot in the Ottawa, the Superior, the Chippewa, the Ottawa, and I wind up in the regional office in Milwaukee. I'd been there a week, and I didn't know anybody, and it was the old Wisconsin Roof Dance Hall, you might remember that. And I kept hearing laughter, so I finished my lunch and went over. Here are these guys in recreation with a nudist book, and some Chicago group had gone up, had been persuaded to go up to the BWCA in May.
Ooh.
And so they went up there, and they had lots of pictures. And in every picture, there were little young people all the way from little kids to old grandpas and grandmas. They were all pretty nearly fully dressed, with one exception. There was a group picture, and you can just imagine the leader saying, look, we've been here for 9 days. We're going home tomorrow. We don't have one picture of us in the nude. So get over there, put your in your clothes and mark your spot, and run off to the side and take your clothes off and come back to the mark, and we'll get a picture. Whoever told them that didn't like nudists. So that was a bear story.
Yes, it certainly was.
Yeah, I was thinking bear, and I wasn't thinking very well. Oh, man. Well, you had a bear story.
Yes.
But it was a B-E-A-R story.
Yeah. Oh, well, you see, when I get my license from the DNR every year, my the question is always asked, and will you be hunting bear this year? And I say, no, I plan to wear clothes. This young woman looked at me like I was from another world. Anyway, when we were there, I had along with me a deputy sheriff from Sheboygan, and he, my son's friend, and they had gone to school together. He was deathly afraid of bears, and before we left, he said to me, now, Jerry, what do you think I should bring along? I've got a .357 Magnum here. I've got this .44 Beretta. What do you think I should bring along? He said, leave them all home. We don't bring any guns along. Well, wouldn't you know it, that's the year that a bear came into our camp, came lumbering down the trail one evening just as the sun was going down, and I'm cooking supper. Now, I am the world's worst cook, but as the story goes and as I share it, this bear was enamored with the smells of my cooking, apparently. And, of course, bears don't see very well, and it didn't smell well, though. And they just came closer and closer. So he was in probably 10 yards of where I was working, and Steve was fishing just behind me. I said, Steve, look around. Steve, oh, my gosh. And I whispered, and Rick, the deputy sheriff, he's in his tent resting. I say, Rick, look out. He opens up the tent flap. He looks out, and he's just about looking face to face at this big black bear. And he goes, oh! He's back in the tent, zips it all up. And that night I said to Rick, I said, how'd you sleep? I didn't sleep at all. That bear was walking around my tent all night. I said, that was a red squirrel. Oh, it was not a red squirrel. It was a bear.
Well, that's one of the many stories you're going to find in Jerry's book. Oh man, as he wrote about the Boundary Waters canoe area, we've got maybe time. Well, I don't know. You've got a great equipment story. I remember in the book too with one of your daughter-in-laws, or was it your daughter, carrying a pack
that was way too big for her. Susie, my daughter Susan, who lives here in Madison, a school teacher, and she's plodding along the trail and catches her toe under a root. That's not hard to do on a portage, and she just goes end over a tea kettle, and she's so embarrassed. And she's I have her picture in the book, but she's got her face covered up because anybody didn't know that she'd have this problem. Larry, can I quickly mention people coming to Canoe Copia? Come hear me at 5:30 on Friday. 3:30 on Saturday, and come to Barnes & Noble if all of that doesn't work on the 15th, Tuesday the 15th at 7 o'clock. And tune in my my blog, my website, www.juryapps.com, and check out my blog, and there's my schedule.
And there's the schedule. And if you go to the Facebook page, and we would love to have some pictures. If you've got some photos from the Boundary Waters area, and I think we've already had a few people put some up, we'd love to see them. So put them up on, go to the Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got some great photos that you want to share from the from your time at the Boundary Waters, we'd love to see them. Jerry, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jerry Apps, author of many books, including the latest, which I really enjoyed, called Campfires and Loon Calls, Travels in the Boundary Waters, published by Fulcrum Press. And I'm sure he'll have another book out at some point. He'll be back. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.